Notes from America is supported by Future Hindsight, an award-winning podcast that shares big ideas about participating in American democracy, beyond voting, but short of running for office. Join host Mila Atmos for stimulating and incisive conversations with citizen changemakers on topics ranging from gerrymandering, policing equity, and voting rights. In this election year, Future Hindsight offers an unaffiliated perspective into what's at stake and how citizens can make an impact at the local, state, and national level. You'll always come away with something hopeful. Tune in every Thursday to get engaged and stay engaged.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Hey, Regina.
Hi, Kai.
So it's Halloween night, and you are a huge fan, as I understand it. What do you love about this holiday?
Yeah, I've always loved Halloween. I think as I've gotten older, it's changed from being a fun time to dress up and go out to being more of a time to think about and be scared of and, I don't know, just have fun with the dead. And there's something about this time of year and the veil being down between the living and the dead and other people also thinking in this space that excites me. I was wondering, what is the history of Halloween? What about this time of year makes people all around the world think about the dead? I thought it would be fun to speak with historians and even speak with a psychic medium who is in this space all year round. So I think it will be a fun conversation.
I cannot wait. So that's tonight's show, the sometimes hidden history of Halloween and how we commune with the dead.
This Halloween, we're asking people about their relationship to those who have passed. What does Halloween signify for you?
I'm from New York, so I know the Halloween celebration is crazy. But at the same time, it makes you think about people that have been here, people that we've lost. We were in Paris once on November 1st, and oh my God, just hordes of people going to the local cemeteries. It doesn't happen so much here.
What does relationship with the dead mean to you?
I speak with my mother and my father quite frequently. I know they're always there with me, cooking a recipe that my mom did or something that my dad enjoyed, watching over me, maybe assurance that I'm on the right path.
Either one of us are not really very religious people, but I've always felt somebody was on my shoulder, and it's a very palpable feeling.
This is the United States of Anxiety. I'm Kai Wright, and I really hear that last person. I too, have always felt somebody is over my shoulder, and it is a palpable emotion. I came by it honest. It's a family thing. My grandmother, toward the end of her life, she was in open conversation with dead people she loved. I'd be sitting with her, and she'd be laughing and joking about somebody in our family who'd already passed. And I noticed she'd be talking in present tense. And then occasionally I'd catch her referring to a conversation she had with one of them. And I'd be like, wait, she's talking about last night. But I understood because me too. My dad, my uncle, now both my grandmothers, they come to me regularly, sometimes too regularly, if I am honest. And to some of y'all, that will sound crazy, no doubt. To others, it will sound perfectly normal. I know there are a wide range of feelings and beliefs about this kind of thing and how we relate to the idea of spirits. So, since we are live with you on Halloween night, we figure instead of talking about the $10 billion in costumes and candy and decorations that U.S. consumers are expected to spend this year, we figure instead let's explore the ways in which we all engage with the dead. It's something that cuts across cultures and faiths globally. So maybe we can learn something about each other by digging into this seemingly universal need to connect with departed souls. We'll go to Ireland and we'll go to Mexico to learn some history, and then we'll come back here where a medium is going to share her practice of traveling inward to find connections beyond the flesh. And we're going to ask your participation in that part. We'll be taking your calls about departed souls with whom you'd like to connect. So stay with us for that. First, the history of Halloween itself takes us back to the Celtics. And to explain that history and what it's got to do with us today, I'm joined by New York University lecturer, Hilary Vick Sivna, who specializes in Irish history. Hilary, thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, I'm delighted to be here, Kai.
So I, for one, do not know the history of this holiday very well, but I know from the Halloween fans on our team that there is a pretty straight line between the stuff happening out in the streets tonight and the Celtic holiday Samhain.
Yes.
So start us off and tell us a little bit about that original holiday. It has to do, as I gather, with the fall equinox, correct?
Yes, indeed, Kai. Firstly, the origin of Halloween comes from the festival of Samhain, as you mentioned, the beginning of the Celtic New Year. And the night itself is called Iha Hauna, and that means the night of Samhain. So if you consider Samhain as meaning November, then Iha Hauna begins at sunset on that last day of October. And to understand the origin, we have to travel back in time quite a long way. We have to go back to Ireland before the first Christian missionaries came, to the community that was there, a mixture of Celtic settlers who'd made their way across Europe and had settled in Ireland, where there were also inhabitants from the Bronze Age and the Stone Age. And these people lived together and their language and customs combined. And way back then, a calendar year was accounted for by the movement of the sun, as it still is in a sense. But they divided their year into four quarters. And the fall equinox that you mentioned there falls in September. And the next big date in the Celtic year would be the shortest day of the year, which is the winter solstice on around about December 21st, the shortest day of the year. And so right in between those two important periods falls Samhain. It's right in between the two of them, and that's how it is decided upon. It's the beginning of the new year. It's the start of the dark time of the year.
And I don't think we appreciate, right, like today, how dark, what that means, the beginning of the dark time when there was no electricity and it gets pretty dark.
It gets pretty dark. And also think of Ireland, which is much more northerly than we are here in the United States. So it's even darker earlier at night and stays dark for a long time. Sun doesn't rise until much later in the morning. And so Samhain celebrated that darkness and that quiet time of year. And representing that new year, it was time for people to settle back and relax before the start of the next, until light started to come into their worlds again. But the interesting thing about Iha Hauna was, at the end of that year, the year gone by, as soon as the sun set on Iha Hauna, until the sun rose the next morning, then the portal to the other world would open, and that would allow spirits to return to Earth for just that night, just one night, only disgruntled spirits, really. And they would visit and they would mingle with their friends and enemies until the next morning.
And what do you think, what was it about that moment that took the Celtics to the spirit world that made them think, okay, this is the moment that the spirits come with us?
Well, because the spirits were always there in their hearts and minds, because life and death was one long process. And that period of time at the end of the light time of the year, that period of time was simply a chance to connect. And so there was, it was a continuation. And the spirits who came back, they may not come back every year. They were just the spirits of people who had perhaps passed away the previous year. Mm-hmm. All other spirits who were happy with their lives would have moved on to the next life. And so some of those spirits maybe had unfinished business. Maybe they wanted to settle a score, as we say today, and try a trick on someone. And maybe someone had wronged them. So usually those spirits and ghosts wandering around on Iha Hauna were those that, you know, they were there for a reason. They were looking out for somebody, perhaps. So that's why everybody decided it might be best to disguise themselves. Because
and that's the costumes.
Because then you might not be recognized if somebody was going to pay you a visit. They might not recognize you if you're well disguised. So that was the beginning of the disguises to hide from these possibly disgruntled spirits.
And Hurley, I'll just note, I think your microphone is shifting a little bit there and we're losing some of you when you talk. So try to, in these still COVID days, we don't do this in the studio anymore.
It might be somebody playing a trick on us.
Oh my goodness. It is one of the spirits have come.
I think it could be because, you know, they don't want all their tricks exposed. So that could well be what's happening. You know, I will know that this is the case if I mislay my glasses later.
So yes. You grew up in Ireland. Did you grow up celebrating Samhain?
Yes. And it was like, it celebrated a little bit differently for me growing up in Ireland. So for myself and my siblings, we celebrated Iahána at home together with my parents. We played games, special games that were only played on that evening after sundown. For example, apple bobbing or apples hanging on strings. If you could get a bite that was considered lucky, then the next year would be good to you. All the games had really had to do with fortune telling because it was the end of the year and everyone was looking forward to the next year. One fun item from that, and actually these continue today, but we also had, there were lots of nuts were eaten and they would all be have their shells on. So part of the fun would be having a nutcracker and opening the nuts, and kids enjoy that. And it's so difficult to do. But we also had some foods, and one in particular was a yeast bread with fruit called a barine brack. And they're still eaten at this tonight in Ireland and possibly in other places around the world. But the interesting thing about this particular cake was that baked into it were a number of tokens wrapped in parchment. And everybody in the family would get a slice. And then depending on what you received in your slice, it would indicate how your year was going to go. So if you received a little silver coin, well, that would mean that you were going to have a very nice year. You're going to be rich and everything is going to be wonderful. But if you got a little dried pea, that wouldn't be so good. Life mightn't be so good for you the following year. Oh. The best token of all was, of course, to find a little golden ring in your piece of barine brack. That meant everything was going to be wonderful and you would probably get married, irrespective of the fact that you might have been 7 or 8 when you would get the ring. and so on. So all these little tokens would be in there, and it was a fun thing. And all the games were fun at home too. We loved them. Yes.
And so Halloween, this celebration comes to the United States with Irish immigrants, correct?
That is correct, yes. And all around the world, of course, because the Irish have been emigrating for a couple of hundred years in large numbers. But the biggest waves were in the early and middle 19th century. And the majority of those Irish who migrated west in those years were essentially refugees because they were fleeing impossible hardships. They left home with nothing but their traditions, their stories, and their ingenuity. They weren't able to carry anything with them. So they held on to those very, very tightly. And that's how Halloween became such a celebration all around the world where Irish people were, and included everybody else too. That was, I think, one thing that makes it special, that everyone is invited to join.
Yeah. And everyone then, as we said at the beginning of the show, uses this moment, whether we realize it or not, to kind of think about the spirits among us.
Yes.
I have about 30 seconds left with you, but like, what do you take from that? This idea that the spirits are among us in this holiday. Do you think of it that way? And what does it mean to you if so?
Absolutely. The spirits, we have to consider that that there are spirits all around us, and we want to make our way through life being mindful and avoiding those who cause trouble, like that dreadful jack-o'-lantern fellow that you know. I mean, we don't want to deal with people like him, because he's the only really, you know, tricky fellow out there. The others are mischievous. So yes, we have to be mindful. We have to have fun. We have to enjoy the spirit world from the safety of our disguises. We should be careful, be good, be generous, and keep those masks on these days.
Hilary Vicksivna is a language lecturer and specialist in Irish history at New York University. Thanks for giving us the backstory on tonight's fun, Hilary.
Thank you.
Coming up, we want to get a bit more personal about the spirit world. Are you like me and my grandmother? Do you talk with the dead? Or is there a departed soul you really wish you could commune with? Get your phones ready, because we want to hear about it. And to prime our minds for that conversation, we'll first learn the history of Mexico's more intimate version of this annual festival. That's next.
Oh, thou disembodied spirits, those of you that have grown old in the mysterious laws of spirit land, we greet thee. We have gathered here at the appointed time. We have complied with all the requirements to enable all of you to make your presence known. Members of the spirit world have long known of the intention of this important gathering tonight. All is in readiness. Please now, the time is at hand. Make yourself known to us.
Any of you, please?
Hi, I'm Regina D. here, and I'm a producer with the United States of Anxiety. In addition to doing all the fun behind-the-scenes stuff, every week I get to go out to talk to people and see what they're thinking about before each episode. Here's a highlight from this week.
My name is Dorinda. I'm from St. Lucia. I know about Halloween from back home, but we don't celebrate it.
Mm-hmm.
But here, it ain't no big thing for me. We don't remember our dead like that. All Saints,
mm-hmm.
you know, this is what we celebrate, how we celebrate our dead.
Uh-huh.
In November month, mm-hmm. we would light candles in front of our home. We'd go to the cemetery, light candles, pray for our dead ones,
mm-hmm.
you know, and put flowers, clean the gravesite.
Even here, you still commemorate All Saints Day and All Souls Day and celebrate your loved one.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we do. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We still do it. Yeah. I'm a Catholic,
mm-hmm.
so that's how we celebrate our dead, not by Halloween.
And now it's time, ladies and gentlemen, time for your next different commentator.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is a very sad night. Children across the nation from coast to coast are disfiguring their faces, dressing themselves in outrageous costumes, and parading the streets. Yes, parading the streets. Making unholy spectacles of themselves, performing unmentionable acts of vandalism, defacing property, turning over swings, littering lawns, ringing doorbells. Yes, ringing doorbells.
Welcome back. I'm Kai Wright, and it's Halloween. We considered taking the night off to go around ringing doorbells like hoodlums. But we couldn't leave you alone on such a night, so we're thinking about spirits and the many different ways we relate to them. Yes, this holiday is about tricks and treats and all that, but it's also one of the few moments in the year when we all consider departed souls and how we do or do not want to commune with them. It's a uniquely collective cross-cultural impulse. Perhaps the most globally famous festival for the dead was developed in Mexico and is widely celebrated by Mexican Americans as well. Columbia University professor Claudio Lomnitz has researched and written extensively about the political and cultural history of death in Mexico. He's a playwright, he's a columnist in Mexico City, and a cultural historian, and tonight we've recruited him as a storyteller. He spoke with our producer Regina Dehir about the melding of indigenous and Catholic traditions in an internationally renowned tradition.
The Days of the Dead, Días de Muertos in Spanish, refers to two holidays that are Catholic, Roman Catholic holidays that were invented during the Middle Ages. The abbot of Cluny in Paris invented All Souls Day for the souls in purgatory and decided to put it next to All Saints Day. So basically, you had one day, November 1st, for all the souls that had already been elevated to glory, that is, to heaven. Those are the saints, the souls of those departed that are already clear of sin. And then purgatory, the next day, the notion was that most people, there were two kinds of sin. One sin, there's mortal sin that took you straight to hell. But there was another kind of sin known as venial sin, but there's sort of more minor sins that everyone and most of us, except the saints, have. And those need to be purged. That's why it's called purgatory. In other words, the soul needs to be cleansed, needs to pay for the sins committed on earth before it can be promoted to heaven. So then initially then, this was a festival that was for the faithful. In other words, you need to have been baptized in order to go to purgatory. If you were, for example, a pagan, or if you were Jewish or a Muslim, these holidays weren't for you because you were not going to be among the saved. That is the origin of this festival, and it arrives to Mexico in the 16th century together with the Spanish friars. What is interesting is that it took very strong in Mexico. You see a lot of fluctuation in how it has been celebrated in different places and in different times. The reason why people like to say there is a Mexican way of doing this is because at a certain point in time in Mexico, this was around the 1920s, 30s, and after that, but it became a point of nationalist pride in part because the great Mexican muralists of the early 1900s, like Diego Rivera, raised it to a sort of point of national identification, which was also resonated a lot in Europe. The European intellectuals like André Breton, sort of founding father of the Surrealist movement, was fascinated by the Mexican connection to death and made a big exhibit in Paris in 1939, right before the outbreak of the war. So Mexican Days of the Dead became kind of internationally famous. Halloween and what it celebrates and what it does is very different from what the Días de Muertos do. There's a sense of ghosts, which is important for the Día de Muertos, except that the way in which the ghosts are represented is highly contrasted, because in the Días de Muertos, the notion is that the souls that are in purgatory come down to see their relatives. So they both have ghosts, but the ghosts in the Mexican Día de Muertos tradition are seen as visitors, actually, whose presence is deeply expected, if you want it that way. People, they're making an altar because they want to attract the souls, but not any soul, the souls of their own dead. So the beautiful thing about the Días de Muertos as it developed in Mexico is that it is a moment of connection to those who you have lost. So there is a kind of conviviality that is staged during the Días de Muertos between the living and their dead, not the dead in the abstract. Halloween is more like, it strikes me that it's more like the dead in the abstract. And one of the important things around the souls in purgatory was to give kind of alms. The idea was when you die, you can no longer, after you're dead, you can no longer accrue merit, and you can also no longer sin. So there's a tally, right? And probably most of the Christians sinned some and left some sins unpaid for, right? So they have to go then to purgatory to pay for those debts. And so it's a little bit, purgatory is very much represented like a jail, a prison. Now, the families of those souls in purgatory can do something to hasten their promotion to heaven. So that, let's say, if I'm concerned that my mother, may she rest in peace, who died a couple of years ago, is in purgatory, then maybe I can do some good deeds in her name, and that will hasten her way out of purgatory. So one of the ways, one of the things that you did was to give things away, to give things away, to give things to the poor, to give alms to the church, but also to give things to children who were often came to represent the souls in purgatory, because they went around and asked for stuff, and they got, you know, whatever, fruit or a piece of bread that was, let's say, a pan dulce, they call it in Mexico, right? The sweet cookies or whatever. So that's a little bit similar to, strikes me, a little bit similar to Halloween. The notion that you would give to children and that that has something to do with the souls. But it seems to me that in the US, at least Halloween, on the one hand, has this sort of scary element. And on the other side, it's a very domesticated scariness. I don't think that there's a sense of a tangible, real ghost. Whereas in the Mexican tradition, there is, because the notion is, it's not that it's some thing called a ghost. It's so-and-so, your uncle, your aunt, coming to visit. And so that's a bit different. It used to be the case that a lot of towns in the countryside, not in the cities, but in the countryside, it wasn't unusual to have a little altar, let's say, outside of the village, where people might leave some offerings or light a candle or put some water in there for ghosts who don't have family, because you don't want those ghosts around, because those ghosts can be dangerous. For instance, those ghosts are in Mexico, they're supposed to be thirsty. They're supposed to want to join in the banquet. And that's very lovely. But if it turns out that you get a ghost who you don't even know, they might be a little bit envious. I actually think that one of the interesting things about what happened in Mexico was that the holiday became to some degree unmoored from the church. It went out of the church's control. It was too popular. And I think that in that sense, there has been a kind of expansion of Mexico's development of this holiday, which is unique. I mean, the holiday isn't unique, but Mexico's development of it is unique. And that has become, I think, an important resource for people, you know, of all persuasions, because here you have a tradition that includes a number of customs, right? Like, for example, setting up an altar at home, or setting up an altar in the office, or going to the graveyard once a year to clean the grave and to decorate the grave and spend the day there, or in some cases, the night there. And then there's a market that is all organized around the days of the dead, and there's a particular kind of flour and a particular kind of bread that's made in a particular, you know. So there's a, let's say, a cultural richness that has been connected to the ritual, like there is, say, in Christmas, around Christmas or Thanksgiving, one of those great festivals. Dia de Muertos in Mexico has that. By myself, I mean, I'm Jewish and I was raised in Mexico, but not particularly in any community, neither in a Jewish community nor in any other religious community. But I did feel at a certain point that I could adopt this and put up an altar for, you know, my family, because one of the things that's very cool about the Mexican development is that it's a way, it's a, it gives you a time and a ritual where you can come together with those whom you've lost. And that's not very common in our societies. We don't have a lot of spaces like that. Certainly no collective spaces like that. You know, maybe you might celebrate privately the anniversary of your father's death or your grandfather's death, but that's not a collective event. That's a personal anniversary. Whereas here you have a date in the calendar year where you can actually think about those who are no longer with you, with us. Not the dead in the abstract, you're dead. And at the same time, because everybody's doing that, there is also the dead in the abstract as well. But there's also an intimate dimension of this holiday, which I think is very interesting. Mexico's development of this idea became at a certain point an example of a way of generating a space of conviviality between the living and the dead in a modern society that very often lacks those kinds of spaces.
That was Columbia University cultural historian Claudio Lomnitz. And it's true, we don't have many spaces in this modern life where we collectively engage with our ancestors. So on Halloween night, we're going to do that together here on the show. I am joined now by psychic medium Betsy LaFay, host of the podcast Trust Yourself, and she's going to share her practice of going inward to connect beyond the flesh. Or that's my way of putting it anyway. Let's see how Betsy describes it. Betsy, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So let's get a basic shared understanding here. First off, what exactly does a medium do?
Sure. Well, a medium's job is to connect with the dead, to get details about their life, their personality, perhaps how they passed, things that are not Googleable, as we say, and deliver them to the sitter or the person who's receiving the reading. Mm. Provide and, evidence, you know, of their life.
Right, right. And I have to say, I was, you know, as we talked about the show, I was kind of nervous about doing the show because I wondered how people would react to it. I feel like so many people consider it strange when I say matter-of-factly that I talk with spirits. Do you have any thoughts about why it's so hard for us to take in that idea, why it's so stigmatized in this life?
Well, I would say that it's definitely more stigmatized in our culture as opposed to other cultures. There are many cultures to this day that actually do have altars to their ancestors. They're dead in the house that they light daily. They light incense and offer water to them. So in our culture, though, I would say that it's almost a two-way street. If somebody wants to walk this walk as you're doing on today's show, which I'm so like happy that you're basically coming out of the closet and stepping up and being, you know, honest and authentic, and despite your fears or trepidations, that requires a lot of responsibility and facing one's own fear and or darkness. The other side of the street is that when you sort of lull people to sleep with sweets and scary movies, maybe even throughout the year, or with other ways of manipulating people into fear, then you have the power, right? So if you're walking around and you don't know that death is a natural part of life and that you have a whole team of people here to support you on the other side, you're walking around with a lot more anxiety than somebody who knows, for instance, like at the top of the show, that their parents are always cooking recipes with them, and that's a sign of comfort and that they know they're on the right track.
Yeah. All right, so listeners, we want to know, frankly, do you talk to dead people? Or if there's a departed soul with whom you'd really like to commune in the way that some festivals like the Day of the Dead celebrate this time of year, who is that? Let's go to Mike in the Bronx. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hi, Kai, and hi, Betsy. Thanks for the show. It's very interesting. Well, I have a half-brother. He passed away several years ago. It was by his own hand. And I've always wondered what was going through his mind, because it's something that I never really reached out to him about. And I've felt some guilt about, and, you know, I've largely come to peace with it, but, you know, just having this opportunity, it would be something that I'd be interested in hearing about, how I might do that or might reach him in that way.
Wow. Thank you for that, Mike. Betsy, I guess, you know, that prompts me. I kind of want to cut straight to the how-to before we take some more calls, because Mike was so clear in asking for help. So can we talk through a little bit what is, you have a meditation that you do to help people get to the place where they can look inward and therefore connect beyond the flesh. Can you talk me through that a little bit?
I would love to. Absolutely. So for anyone who wants to know, I use the words intuitive and psychic interchangeably. And this sounds kind of like all Muppets are puppets, but not all puppets are Muppets. Okay. So all intuitive people or psychic people have the ability to be mediums, but that's an advanced skill. However, we can cut through everything tonight, and we're going to do that with a very brief sort of sample meditation. Now, the reason why I started back there is I also say everyone is intuitive. Mike's intuitive. Kai, you're intuitive. All the listeners are intuitive. If and only if you have a body. So, Kai, do you have a body?
I got a body.
Okay. I think Mike has a body. If he doesn't, he can tweet at you later and we can help him. The reason why I say that is because your intuition and your spirits on the other side, your loved ones, will communicate to you through your body. So what we'll do today in our little sample, and then we do have a longer version at the end of the show. Is that right?
Yeah, the whole 7-minute, I believe.
Yeah,
version.
Yeah. So when we do the shortened version today, everyone has the same exact potential to receive as much information as they desire. So Mike's desire is to find out what happened to his stepbrother's mind before he took his own life. And I can only imagine what relief and solace that would give to someone like Mike. So when we go through this and we go through our imagination, I'm going to be walking you through an imagination exercise with some breath. When we get to the place where we're sort of picturing ourselves in a room, what we're going to do is not only just use our like sort of mind's eye, for example, Kai, picture an apple in your head right now. And any listener, picture an apple in your head. Everyone is picturing an apple. It's that easy. When we do this exercise, the only thing that's going to impede you is your doubt. And so what I'll tell people is, if you're saying, well, this can't mean anything, or this isn't real, or that's just too small, that basically means you're doing it right. And you also want to tune into all of your five, and I'm going to get a little freaky because we're on the freaky show tonight, your sixth sense. And so the sixth sense is that knowing. I mean, Kai, you talked about it in the intro. I just know that there's someone over my shoulder. I just have that knowing, right? So when we go through this sample, and then if you choose to listen to the longer version on the podcast, which I highly recommend because it takes you through more of a relaxation, which really opens up the door, no matter what time of year. When you're in that space communing with your loved ones who you've lost, that's the time when you're going to want to pay attention to the subtleties in your hands and your feet. You're going to want to pay attention to any random memories that come up. Smells. Literally, you're going to want to, you know, breathe through your nose. And some of you might smell smoke where there's no smoker in sight. And that might be your grandfather, right? So every sense plus that, like, many people are going to walk away from this saying, I didn't get anything, but I just feel loved. That's your message. That's the gift. And that's even wonderful. For anyone who wants to develop any of this further, my biggest advice is, you know, as we would say in the world of the flesh, as you've been speaking of, don't kick a gift horse in the mouth. You're going to be given tiny, subtle things, and you don't want to diminish those things. You don't want to say, I didn't get anything but this stupid thing, which a lot of people do. You want to say, oh my gosh, I feel love, or I felt warmth in my chest, or my hands felt tingly. I don't know what that means, but this means I'm moving in the right direction. And that leaves you open to more loving communication from your same loved ones beyond this meditation. Does that make sense?
That makes total sense. And Betsy, I hate to say it, but I'm going to have to take a break before we take a little taste of it. We're going to come back with more of your calls and with more from psychic medium Betsy LaFay and talk about this impulse to connect with those who have left our mortal world, which seems like a uniquely universal thing in a time in which we don't have a lot of things we share.
NYC Now delivers the most up-to-date local news from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. With three updates a day, listeners get breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from across New York City. By sponsoring programming like NYC Now, you'll reach our community of dedicated listeners with premium messaging and an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to get in touch and find out more.
In the dream, you are falling, lost in the listening distance. As dark locks in. Nightfall.
This is the United States of Anxiety. I'm Kai Wright, and happy Halloween. We have spent the holiday talking about how people in cultures around the world mark this change of season with festivals that, in some way, involve communing with spirits. And for this last segment of the show, I am joined by psychic medium Betsy LaFay, who hosts the Trust Yourself podcast. She's joining me as we take your calls. So let's go to Anya in Brooklyn. Anya, welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you so much. Last year, during the COVID year, July 19th, a dragonfly showed up in the front of my house. And it was exactly to the day that my little sister died 2 years prior. And
wow.
This dragon, Yeah, and this dragonfly, she stayed around for 3 weeks. She showed up every day on the same plant at the same time. And not only that, she allowed me to take amazing close-up photos of her. And because she showed up on the day that my little sister died, I couldn't help thinking that it was my little sister who showed up in the form of a dragonfly.
That's beautiful, Anya. Thank you. Let's go to Unique in Manhattan. Unique, welcome to the show.
Hi. It's Anique. Thank you for having me on. In 2014, my mom passed away. She died a long, slow death. She had progressive aphasia. She was quite young. And when she passed, I'm an immigrant, obviously. My parents were in Ireland. She died at 4:44 a.m. When I learned of her death, it was 4:44 a.m. And I often see, when I see 444, I always, or any form of fours, I think of my mom. And I first became aware of numerology when I was first pregnant with my first child, and it was 11:11. It was 11s that used to follow me around and sequences of numbers. But my dad, and there was a duck involved as well. I was listening to Anya. There was a duck involved as well in my mother's passing. There was so many messages from her. But when my father died in 2019, and I was really very close with my dad, there were no messages, and there was a lot of turmoil and family dispute surrounding his death. My last call with him was very hard, and it was about, there was a lot of interference from outside with my relationship with my dad and his passing. And I'm lost because I never really got to hear from him again after he died. Mm. And that was the reason I was calling.
Thank you for that, Anique. Mm. Betsy, what about this? Because this, I think, is probably a recurring theme, this idea of not being able to have head closure, I guess. Is that something that comes up a lot in your practice?
Yes, but before I go over sort of a general thing, I want to say to Anique, I would say what I'm sort of getting from you is that you're probably relatively empathic, picking up on other people's energy. And so this lesson of not being able to hear from your father, basically up until now, because we're going to be doing the meditation and you'll be able to connect, is a little bit of a gift, because your relationship with your father is your own. And so you get to, like we were hearing with the other traditions in the show, sort of make peace with your past with him and that turbulence between you. And then that's your relationship. But when other people's energy gets involved, it's the same thing as in the 3D world. So when you learn how to do that through spirit contact, it's also a really good lesson on how to not take on other people's energy in the 3D world. But Kai, what you were saying, yeah, that is a very big thing. It's very similar to Mike calling up and having some feelings of guilt, or a lot of people, they want to know what the last moments of their loved one's life were like. Are they, is the deceased upset with the living? Or does the deceased see the new life that's happened since they passed? You know, does dad know I'm engaged? And does, you know, he like my fiance or whatever that might be? There's a lot of questions like that. Yeah.
Mm. Let's go to Susan in Washington Heights. Susan, welcome to the show.
Oh, hello. Yes, I'm not sure what I want to ask. My father committed suicide in 1975. I was 19. My family lied about it. I found out about 17 years later at my brother's wedding. And I have no idea. They lied. They told me he had a stroke. He actually stabbed himself to death. He was psychotically depressed. But I have no idea how he's doing in the other world. I hope he's okay.
I'm sorry to hear that, Susan.
Yeah.
So again, this is a theme that we've heard, Betsy. Mm. So we've got like 3 or 4 minutes here, because I want to make sure we have these 2 minutes for the meditation.
Yeah.
But quickly, and you know, what is the point here? Why is this important that people be able to do this practice? Why do you think it's important that we be able to think about this?
I don't think it's a practice, Kai. I think it's a sense, right?
So
it may sound extreme, but think of the story of Helen Keller and the miracle worker. She, you know, couldn't hear, she couldn't see, right? And when finally that sign language got through the palm of her hand and she realized that people were speaking, that everything had names, and she woke up. She was no longer, quote unquote, dumb. Right. That's a term they used back then. I'm not calling Helen Keller dumb by any means. It's opening up to a sense that is innate in us, and that I consider these times to be the dark ages, because we're disconnected from something that there's no reason other than programmed fear. Or, and as you mentioned earlier, you know, your fear of what other people may think. And power dynamics that we can break out of. So I think it's health promoting. I think it will help us relate to the environment. And I think that without it, we're in a lot of anxiety, fear, and doubt.
So we've only got just a touch of time here. Again, everybody, we're going to get the full meditation on the podcast feed and on our website. Can you give us just the 60-second version? I'm sorry, Betsy, but we ran out of time.
No, that's all right. No, that's good. So all I want us to do is just close our eyes and take a deep breath in and hold it and exhale one more time, a deep inhale, bigger than you've ever taken, and exhale. And let's just for a moment picture one person that we would like to connect with on this day, someone who we've lost. But we're going to picture them surrounded and infused by love. A lot of times you can see that with pink light. So you can just imagine their light emanating pink light, their heart emanating pink light, infusing them with all this loving energy. Take a deep breath in as you breathe that pink light into your own body. And in this moment, as you're breathing, if you take note of how you're feeling, you're already feeling different than you were 60 seconds ago. It's because of breath, yes. But it's also because you're deeply, innately connected to your loved ones on the other side. And now you're a bit more consciously aware of it. I've never met a spirit on the other side that was suffering, Kai. I've never met a spirit on the other side that was angry at the living or felt that they died unjustly or at the wrong time. I really wanted to get that message out there. No pets have ever come back to me in the 15 years that I've been doing readings professionally saying that they died at the wrong time or in the wrong way. And that, I hope, brings a lot of comfort to people.
Betsy LaFay is a psychic medium and Trust Yourself teacher. The third season of her podcast, Trust Yourself, will launch in December. Betsy, thanks so much for this time.
It was a great honor.
The United States of Anxiety is a production of WNYC Studios. A special thanks to WNYC's archivist Andy Lancet for all those wonderful old recordings we played during the breaks. Our theme music was written by Hannes Brown and performed by the Outer Borough Brass Band. Mixing and music by Jared Paul. Kevin Bristow and Milton Ruiz were at the boards for the live show. Our team also includes Emily Botine, Regina Dehir, Karen Frillman, and Kusha Navadar. And I am Kai Wright. You can keep in touch with me on Twitter at Kai_Wright. And of course, you can send me those voice memos at anxiety@wnyc.org. I hope you'll join us for the live version of the show next Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern. You can stream it at wnyc.org or tell your smart speaker to play WNYC. Okay, so podcast listeners, as promised, here is Betsy LaFay's full meditation to prepare you for connecting with departed souls you'd love to reach.
To begin today's guided meditation, I invite you to minimize distractions. Put your phone in do not disturb. Tell your loved ones that you are meeting with a VIP. Maybe that VIP is yourself, or as I say, your spirit entourage. Let's close our eyes, begin to focus on our breath, and begin to be aware of our bodies. This is the time where you want to kind of get the wiggles out a little bit. So you can wiggle your shoulders out a little bit. You can breathe into your belly really big. Push it all out. And let's get into our hips a little bit. So just rock from side to side a little bit, lifting up, feeling that root, that tailbone. Wiggle your legs and your feet and your hands. Yeah, getting all the wiggles out. Shake a little bit. And you'll naturally come to a place where you're ready for a little bit more stillness. Yeah. So let's straighten our spines. Uncross our legs and uncross our arms. But yet be relaxed. Relax those shoulders. Today we're going to be focusing a lot on the breath. So take a deep inhale with me. Then exhale. Let's do another one. Deep inhale. Then exhale. Continue breathing on your own. You're just getting in touch with the rhythm of your own body and breath. Taking deep inhales. And then emptying your lungs all the way, completely. That's great. And again, you can come to a relaxed breathing pace, relaxed body posture. And we're just going to use our imaginations. So imagine when we inhale a deep breath, and we can send that fresh, new oxygen and energy to different parts of our body. Just using our imagination. Just as though we can say, picture an apple, feel an apple, taste an apple. We can breathe in this oxygen. Do it with me now. And send it to the top of our heads, very top of our heads. Yeah. And blow it out. And we'll send another deep breath to the top of our heads. And as we do, we'll relax the very top of our heads. So with each breath, we relax our body a little bit more. Breathing in, allowing our foreheads to gently relax, release any tension, letting it melt down your face as you exhale. As you breathe, allow this new energy, this new breath, this relaxing life force to relax your eyes, release the back of your head. Feel this soothing new energy in your jaw. Breathe in. Breathe into these spaces and let go. Feeling your face relax and release. This breath is healing and releasing. Taking a full inhale into the neck. Feeling it cascade into the shoulders, out into the arms, all the way to your fingertips. Bring your awareness to your chest, the back of your body. Take the biggest breath of all into your entire torso and blow out. One more time into the entire torso. And release. Oxygenating each and every cell. Breathing into the thighs, largest part, muscles of the leg. Breathe into that area. Light it up with your breath. And let go. Release, relax, and let go. Breathing into your shins, your ankles. And taking that extra breath for your feet and toes. Carrying us around all day, we relax, release, and let go. As you continue to breathe, just take a moment to feel the difference in your body. And as we breathe, we'll bring our awareness to our heart space in the center of our chest. I'd like you to imagine a cozy, light-filled room inside your heart. This could be in the center of your chest. This could be in your mind's eye. This could be in your physical heart. It doesn't matter. It's in your imagination. So just imagine yourself in this cozy room. Maybe there's cushions. Your favorite colors. Maybe you feel a sense in your body of comfort, of being this place that feels like home. This is your home. And we're ready to invite our loved ones into our home. So take a deep breath and feel the love in your heart that already exists. And start to see a door in this room. Maybe you know who's on the other side, maybe you don't. Either way, I promise you, we're here for the same purpose of love, connection, and healing. So with that, in surprise and delight, I invite you to take a deep breath and open that door. Allowing your loved ones to come in. Some of you will see them. Some of you will sense them in your heart. But as you continue to breathe, open up all of your senses, including taste, smell, and touch. Maybe you hear something or you just have that knowing. I'll leave you here for a few moments, and when the time is right, I'll call you back. Time that you have with your loved ones and this space is one that you can come back to at any time. So as we prepare to say goodbye for now or see you later, let's take a moment of gratitude for whoever and whatever showed up. Just as children are often given gifts that they don't understand until later. Let's even be grateful for the gifts that we've been given that we may not understand. And so if you desire, give your loved ones a hug. Maybe they have one last gift for you. And just know you can come back to this space whenever you want. And so over the next couple of deep breaths, you're invited to come back to the here and now, to the physical space. The physical space that is never too far away from the space where all of your loved ones in your entourage live.
Notes from America is supported by Future Hindsight, an award-winning podcast that shares big ideas about participating in American democracy, beyond voting, but short of running for office. Join host Mila Atmos for stimulating and incisive conversations with citizen changemakers on topics ranging from gerrymandering, policing equity, and voting rights. In this election year, Future Hindsight offers an unaffiliated perspective into what's at stake and how citizens can make an impact at the local, state, and national level. You'll always come away with something hopeful. Tune in every Thursday to get engaged and stay engaged.